And welcome to the Climate Minute, your source for insight and perspective on global warming news. My name is Ted McIntyre, and this show is for the week of August 11th, 2019. Today we're joined by Riley Grealish, who is a second-year veterinary student way far away from Boston. She's at the University of Nebraska at Lincoln, studying veterinary science. How are you doing, Riley?
I'm doing good.
Good. So, tell me, Riley, what drew you to veterinary science, to be a veterinarian to begin with? What's your motivation? It sounds like an entrance exam question. I'm not interviewing you for the vet school, but
I think that was an interview question, actually. I guess I'm one of those people that just kind of always knew. I couldn't tell you when, you know, I specifically was like, oh, okay, veterinarian, that's definitely what I want to do. I just kind of, it was always there in my head that I wanted to work with animals, and veterinarian is the first thing that, you know, comes to mind. And so as I got a little bit older and realized that I like the science aspect of it. I'm definitely more of a life sciences kind of person, not so much chemistry and physics. And so it was just a good fit. And I knew, and again, as I got older and you know, started college and everything, started undergrad, that it wouldn't be enough just to work with animals, you know, as a zookeeper or maybe as a conservation biologist or something. I wanted that medical aspect of it. And so it was kind of getting it to a point where I was like, this is where I truly see myself. It was kind of a process, in terms of, you know, where do I fit in the veterinary world? But it never really felt that I was, you know, trying to force that fit. Mm-hmm. So for me, it was always, you know,
it's funny. It sounds like, I mean, the organic growth into finding out what you want to be when you grow up is always an interesting one. People have many paths, right? You sound like you basically listened to your heart and followed what you wanted to do and found a place to combine it all, huh?
Yeah.
So tell me, is there anything, Nebraska is quite a different place from Massachusetts in the sense of the kinds of animals that are roaming around. I mean, is there a particular bent to the kinds of stuff you're studying? I guess I'm thinking there must be lots of livestock and stuff. Is that a strength or something you're interested in?
So for me, I guess, again, kind of, it was kind of a process coming into, you know, a name to what I wanted to do. So, you know, you think of veterinarian, you think of dogs and cats and maybe a rabbit and a guinea pig here and there. And then, you know, when I got, that was, you know, like in my head, like, oh, dogs and cats. And then when I got older, you know, there are livestock veterinarians. And then into the mix, there was something called mixed practice, which actually turns out to be the reality for most large animal practitioners, is that you're seeing maybe primarily livestock, you know, horses and cattle, but, you know, there'll be a dog and a cat too, just to kind of keep the business going. And, you know, farmers, they have dogs and cats and things like that. And it just, I knew there was something that was different than those two. You know, it didn't feel like something that I wanted to do. I knew that I could be happy doing it, but just didn't quite feel right. I knew I wanted to work with wildlife. I didn't know if that was something that, you know, people did, you know, happenstance or something like that. And then, you know, come to find out, oh, they're zoo veterinarians, but did I really want to work in a zoo? And I just remember one book that I read, I think it was called, Appointments at the End of the Earth or something like that. And it was about this, he was a veterinarian at the Bronx Zoo, but he was also a wildlife and conservation veterinarian. And so he would go out on these different, you know, in Africa or in Southeast Asia or, you know, different places. And I was like, that's it. That's what I want to do. I know what I want to do. I want to work with, you know, with wild populations, maybe more at a population level, but also, you know, helping to keep manage those populations and keep them healthy. And
Interesting.
so,
And so how does that, so clearly, that's very interesting. So wild populations, and you're studying in Nebraska. I mean, I guess since this is a climate show, the question is, do you see a connection? What's the through line from sort of your interest in the care of wildlife populations and, I mean, and climate stuff? There must be impacts in Nebraska of climate change, right?
yeah, I think just real quick, I forgot to answer your question earlier. So yes, Nebraska, University of Nebraska is a heavily agricultural school. It's a land grant university, so we do put a lot of focus into that, which actually, with the focus, primarily on livestock, there is a big connection between, managing those populations and then managing maybe a wildlife population, because you're not looking so much at the individual animal, you're looking at kind of at that whole, the whole aspect of herd health is what it's called. Again, it was kind of one of those things that there were two separate passions almost. Like, I really cared about the environment. It was just always kind of a natural, like, I liked the outdoors. I had a fascination with animals, the snake and the odd snake in the backyard and things like that. And then being interested in wildlife from a veterinary medical perspective, but those things are so connected, because if you are not taking care of the whole ecosystem, humans included, you're not addressing those problems from that population perspective. And so I think that's kind of where the overlap is. In my head, it's if there are no wildlife populations to manage, there's really nothing to do about it.
Is it
But in
just
it,
from a sort of a animal husbandry? If I'm a farmer, am I concerned about the bees and the sort of, the bees that are pollinating the clover that the animals are eating, or is that kind of divorced nowadays, given the kinds of agriculture that's done?
So there are, it is actually kind of emerging. Veterinarians are more and more being sought for managing beehives, to be, to have that knowledge about, because insects are, an animal. And so that's something that is more of an interest. And I don't know about, with livestock, bees and that kind of thing. I do know one of the biggest things right now that producers are facing, other than, the droughts and the flooding and things like that, is diseases. So zoonotic diseases, if you throw humans in the mix, so you have diseases that pass from humans to animals and vice versa. That is a big threat, especially from an emerging infectious diseases standpoint. And that's can be a big issue when there's human-animal overlap, in countries that maybe aren't equipped to deal with that. Here in Nebraska, we're now starting to see, I guess this isn't zoonotic, well, kind of, but so Lyme disease is starting to migrate farther north. We have the ticks that, were far found farther south, but now it's starting to be found in Nebraska. And so that has an effect as well. Because with the warmer climates, the more humid, the wetter it is, you're going to have those diseases
We have
emerge.
Lyme ticks everywhere here in Massachusetts now. It's really, really
Yeah.
bad. So tell me, one of the things that we spoke about is a group at the University of Nebraska-Lincoln called, I think it's One Health, that is trying to take a holistic view of these things. Are you familiar? Tell me more about that.
So that is actually, it's the program at Nebraska is only a few years old, but it is kind of more institutionalized in at other schools. And basically, it is a framework that kind of it's a framework that supports, like, the human animal environmental interface. And so you're looking at, rather than just looking at human health, which is now kind of an emerging field, especially in the health community, public health, which can involve animals, but then you're putting environmental health into that. And so it looks at all three of those different areas and really how they're interconnected. And so if you don't take care of one, then you're kind of putting the other two at risk, or, you know, and that kind of thing. And so it looks at how there can be interdisciplinary management of specifically, you know, emerging infectious diseases, or, you know, issues with groundwater, or, you know, knowledge about, like, oh, dog bites and rabies mm-hmm. transmission mm-hmm. and things like that. So it is kind of, it encourages, rather than, you know, the human health sector and the environmental health sector and the animal health sector working separately, it really encourages cooperation among those institutions and those different entities.
Does it bring people from each of those disciplines into the same space? I see on the website it talks about a lab. I mean, do you have people from each group sort of collaborating on projects?
Yeah, absolutely. And so at Nebraska, since it is kind of a smaller, it's mostly right now it's a little bit smaller just because it runs on grant funding and things like that. We have a few, it's kind of a working group, and so we have myself and some other veterinary students. We have some people in the nursing school and in the medical school here in Nebraska, and we have grad students that are working on different projects that kind of look at, you know, for instance, we have one student who looked at like fox populations in Lincoln, and so he was, you know, taking data on, you know, different foxes and then testing any fecal samples that he found for diseases that could potentially cross over into the human health sphere.
Mm-hmm.
And so, but like at Iowa State University, for example, they have a very well-developed One Health program, and that they are able to kind of facilitate a little bit more. But it is essentially kind of an idea that is becoming more and more of a way to manage, you know, like the environmental and health and animal health
mm-hmm.
issues that are coming up, and really recognizing that they're interconnected.
Do you think at that, so I think it's really good to have sort of this integrated approach to the entire, you know, the human environmental animal system. I mean, is there much connection within that, within those studies to climate change, or is it sort of more, I mean, as an ag school, probably you're mostly driven by the needs of the industry, the local industry, right?
Yes, and that's kind of been a challenge, and just recognizing that underlying it all, so there, you know, there are issues with increasing production, increasing yield, things like that. But I guess the challenge is really stressing that underlying a lot of these issues, the majority of these issues, is climate change, and that we can put band-aids on top of as much as we can up until a certain point, at which, you know, we really have to look at the underlying issue. And so
mm-hmm.
in the way I kind of look at it is One Health is more of an adaptation approach, which is different than, you know, there's the difference between adaptation and mitigation.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so really in dealing with emerging infectious diseases and dealing with those kinds of issues, that is kind of adapting.
Right.
While still recognizing that we need to deal with the underlying issue, which is climate change. And I guess that's kind of why I, you know, got involved more at a political level, because, you know, a lot of the time that is how things actually, you know, you can talk about how much this needs to happen as much as you want, but if you're not doing something from the mitigation perspective, if you're not really trying to push those levers of, you know, of power, so to speak, I guess. And so that's,
well, it sounds like you're a prime example of the argument that says you begin, you know, one way in is to talk about adaptation, and then the penny drops and people say, oh my God, we have to do mitigation at the same time, right?
Yeah,
and,
exactly.
You know, they're talking about building seawalls across Boston Harbor, and somebody says, well, wait a minute, maybe we need to reduce carbon dioxide emissions at the same time if we're going to put all this money into a seawall, right?
Yeah, I mean, we just had major flooding here in the Great Plains and in the Midwest, and there, you know, the levees didn't hold. We need to build stronger levees on these rivers, and And it's kind of a short-term solution.
Right.
And it's easy to say, you know, we have, you know, this is a little bit different, a little more minor of an issue. But one of the biggest things that we complain about in Lincoln is, oh, the roads, they always have potholes. But, you know, it's because of those cycles of whatever. But maybe if you built a more sustainable transportation system, you know, so you kind of have to look at the longer term. Definitely.
Well, Riley, it's been very interesting chatting about all these connections, and it's especially great to hear that you're in Nebraska working away, connecting all these important dots, right? There are lots of ways to skin the cat. Well, I suppose I shouldn't say that to a veterinarian, but I mean, there's lots of ways to address the climate issue, and you're working on both sides of it, right?
I hope so.
That's good for you. Good for you. Well, look, Riley, let's put it down there. What I'll do is put up some links to the various things we've talked about. That'll be on the blog at massclimateaction.org/blog. You can find us on the Facebook page. You can send us an email to podcast@massclimateaction.net to let us know what kinds of things we're doing right and wrong and stuff we ought to be talking about. You can listen to our show directly on your smartphone using any of those podcast distribution apps. I want to thank DR for his continuing research support. And I want to close by saying that because we recognize the necessity of personal accountability for our actions, because we accept responsibility for building a durable future, because we believe it's our patriotic duty as citizens to speak out, we must insist that the United States transform its energy sector over the next decade under a just and equitable plan that uses regulation, investment, and a price on carbon to safeguard our collective future. So, Dr. Grealish, thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you.
Well, thank everyone for listening. We'll talk to you again soon. Bye-bye.
Very cool.